The island's first set of biodiversity action plans marks a significant step in the island's commitment to nature conservation. There certainly seems to be a greater focus on protecting the island's biodiversity, but will these plans make a difference? Is there any budget to help deliver the plans? Well, the experts are here to tell us why all this matters.
I'm Ken Milne, I'm Director of Environment in DEFA.
I'm John Ward, I'm the Inland Fisheries Policy Manager.
I'm Richard Selman, I'm the Ecosystem Policy Manager at DEFA.
Liz Charter, I used to be DEFA, but now I'm Chairman of the Isle of Man Fungus Group.
We're here to talk about the launch of our biodiversity action plans. So we're delighted it builds upon our biodiversity strategy. This is now the next level for how we're going to deliver on those action plans, working with our key partners. And we're delighted to have one of our key partners here today with us.
And where do these action plans come from? They come out of a strategy, do they?
The strategy sets the scene, but working with all our partners, and these are numerous organisations around the island, so DEFA work very closely with those partners to identify what the key issues are, the key challenges we have, and then to how we could prioritise and work to maintain and conserve those biodiversity habitats.
So Richard, then, I mean, this is a great initiative, and obviously something that over your many years in working for government, working in particular for the biodiversity around the island, looking to protect it and promote it, this is something that's a great achievement, I presume.
Yeah, it's really exciting because this is where hopefully the action happens. Resulting from technical specialists from around the island, outside, within government, in all sorts of organisations, getting together and really deciding what are the really key species and habitats that need our help, and what are the priorities in terms of making a difference for those species and habitats on the ground in the Isle of Man where we all live. So having got the information from the technical specialists, obviously we need to now put that into action, find the resources. So these plans that we're publishing here, and this is the first tranche, and there will be more coming forward, it'll be put onto the website as they are agreed, will direct our attention and focus onto those really key actions that make the most difference. So if anybody really wants to see what it is that needs doing for lead moss, blanket bog, salt marsh, tree sparrows, all sorts of things in there, then go and have a look and see what it is that we see as the really key things. And there are some things that will require coordinated action or government functions. There are other things that people could do outside in their own environment, whether on their farm, in their garden, or wherever it happens to be. So it's worth keeping an eye on the website and seeing what new is coming forward there and what can be helped with, and whether you work for an organisation that might want to engage with this, whether in terms of doing works or providing resources in order to get things to happen that can be linked to that business.
One of the things that surprises people perhaps these days is actually it shouldn't or doesn't have to be government that does all of this stuff. Actually, there are lots and lots of volunteer groups around the island. There are lots of people who perhaps own land and have the capacity for doing this because it's a good thing to do. It doesn't have to be a government-led thing, but you've helped produce these plans.
Yeah, wherever people come from, they'll be coming from a different perspective, and there are things that they can help with from there, even if it's providing records and getting involved in finding out what is out there. For instance, the Tree Sparrow Project's doing quite well at the moment. Has started from a position of we really don't know whether there's a viable population at the moment, and they're getting to a stage just now where they're finding, okay, they've got a site that seems to be a centre of population, they seem to be staying there to nest, we've got the nub of something here, we need to get the resources in, make sure they're well fed, they've got nesting provisions, and make sure that they can spread. And of course the stage after that is, well, where are they going to spread to? One farm is not a viable population. We need them to be across wider parts of the island. So which other areas of land are people prepared to make good for tree sparrows and to provide for them so they can spread out from these areas and return nature on a much wider basis on the island here?
And Liz, I mean, you have led the government charge for many years, but obviously now you're in a different role. Why is any of this important? You know, there may be a lot of people listening to this program thinking, well, okay, biodiversity has been there for millennia. why do we need to do anything to support it now?
I think I've probably been saying this for some time, that we shouldn't be complacent. And for example, the tree sparrows that Richard was talking about, we've let them get to the point of near extinction. And I don't think it's acceptable for the island to let species go extinct. It's important to this island. It's part of its culture and its natural heritage. And we need to look after it. It's we have a responsibility now. We've signed up to the Convention on Biological Diversity. So we've looked around and people say, oh, the hills are green and we see lots of bluebells and it all looks lovely, especially in May. But quietly, things are disappearing. We're not hearing the song of the yellowhammer anymore. Swifts have been in decline and we don't hear the sounds of them in the streets. But young people today maybe are not aware of what we're losing.
And it is, it's perhaps sometimes we're so busy with our electronic devices, computers and what have you, that we miss the world that exists outside of the human part of that world.
But the electronic devices are also part of the answer, because even today people have sent me photographs and said they've been trying to identify something, maybe Japanese knotweed in their garden, and they're using these apps. So there's lots of apps listening to birds, identifying bird song. I think it's actually on the rise, the use of the electronic equipment to use for enjoying nature.
So then, John, I mean, the UK famously has problems with its inland waterways. The Isle of Man, I'm guessing, doesn't have quite so many problems as the UK faces, but presumably there are similar difficulties in relation to protecting biodiversity in our inland waters.
Absolutely, yeah. We're very fortunate on the island, and a lot of our watercourses are deemed healthy, and there's a lot of positive things going for them. However, they do still face similar challenges that the UK are obviously suffering from, especially in the realms of the Atlantic salmon, which are a species now considered endangered by the International Union for Conservation, and as such the UK populations are in significant decline. They've said that 23% of the species have disappeared in that population. On the Isle of Man, however, we still have good numbers of Atlantic salmon. However, we are seeing trends that they are slowly declining, and we need to act now before, you know, we get into the position that the UK are in.
Part of the problem, perhaps, in relation to a number of species that frequent the Isle of Man, is that they also frequent other parts of the world, and they have perilous journeys getting here and going back to wherever it was that they need to go to at different times of the year. There's only so much we can do in the island, though, isn't there?
Yeah, that's true. Migratory species, we can sort of help them from our side of the fence, but once they head back out to the ocean environment, there's not much more that we can do other than to try out and do our bit whilst they're with us in our rivers. And there are certain, you know, a fair amount that we can still do and improve to build better habitats and enhance what we currently have. Certainly our water quality on the island is extremely good, which is a positive thing. However, there is lots of development that comes with having communities, trying to expand and increase populations. It's putting pressure on resources such as water, potable water, and that all affects the environment.
Ken, then, from a DEFA point of view, obviously the plans have been produced. What does DEFA hope will result from this?
Well, the key things for us are identify the priorities for what we should be focusing our attention on, and we're very keen to work with partners. You know, DEFA cannot go this alone. We have to work with other organisations, other volunteers, to maximise and leverage those opportunities to conserve these populations, these habitats, as much as possible.
And to a certain extent, is part of the advice actually to not interfere with some of the habitat.
I think that's a very topical point, because one of the action plans that we have here on the list already on the website is for beach nesting birds. And now is the time of year that I think most able-bodied, active people like to be out on the beach at some point, and may be very unaware of some of the impacts that occur if you're not noticing what's around you and the birds that are maybe secretively sneaking off a nest and won't come back until you've shifted and you settle down and have your picnic there and the eggs go cold. That's a big problem, or you can stumble across and walk on them. So walking down in the lower shore obviously is a lot safer because things are going to be nesting above the tide line. So that's something to be very aware of at the moment. So if you're not aware of the beach nesting birds issue, then it's worth just having a quick look at that action plan just to see what the kinds of issues are, you know, whether a species such as ringed plover or an oyster catcher nesting at the head of the beach, just to be particularly careful. We don't want to curb people's enjoyment, but we want them to do it in a sensitive manner and know that they're doing the right thing and not the wrong thing and not having an impact that's detrimental in some way.
Because again, part of the UNESCO biosphere status the Isle of Man has is that people should enjoy the biosphere. But of course, there are sensible steps that can be taken just to avoid unnecessary hindrance to various species. So the action plans. Where would someone who were fancy to walk along the beach, where would they go to find the action
plan? Yeah, the action plans are on a page in the Biosphere Isle of Man website, in the projects pages. You can see them all there, and as new ones come forward, they'll be listed there too.
And it's fairly obvious stuff, I'm guessing. You know, if you were wanting a walk along a beach, what are the kinds of things that you would expect? What would the action plan tell you?
Well, the problem with the beach nesting birds essentially is that they're so well camouflaged, you often don't know they're there until it's too late. You know, your dog's trodden in the nest or what it happens to be. It does occur that we do see it. And so it really is awareness and knowing that at this time of year when they are nesting, to go below the tide, go on the intertidal line, you know, when it's not high tide, and you know that you're safe in that area. And if you're going to settle down and, you know, make a lot of disruption and enjoy yourself, you know, do it in an area that you know is not the quiet corner that the ringed plover's nesting in. So be aware of what's going on around you and keep your eyes open and your ears open. And if you see something, you know, just take account and think, is that something that I'm causing there?
And Liz, then, I mean, you're the non-government person here, so perhaps you can speak with a little bit more freedom than used to be the case when you worked for government. In relation to these action plans, it seems to have taken a while from the production of the strategy to the production of the action plans. Is that something that we should be concerned about?
I think we should be concerned about it, but the great thing is that we have reached a point now where they are available for people to see and read, and that's the really important thing. It's sad that we haven't got here earlier, but, you know, there's somebody who used to say we are where we are, and Yeah, it's great, and there are more and more people who are showing an interest in the natural world and are getting involved in invertebrate recording. Somebody I know is now heavily into earthworms and woodlice, and there is all sorts of interest welling up, I think, on the island. And it's really important that is thoughtful interest as well as just the wish to collect lots of mushrooms or something. So that's good.
And you gave me a fascinating tour of a couple of fields in front of my house about 6 months ago, and it was just quite incredible to see how much there is there and how little of it I had noticed. I mean, I did notice that there were some mushrooms and they were interesting shapes and sizes, but I had no idea how many.
There are a lot of fungi on the island. I think the checklist we've just published, the Isle of Man Fungus Group has just published, has about 1,400 fungi been recorded. And we're finding new species every year. So I could easily have found something new to the island in one of your fields.
So in terms then of the action plans, what would landowners get out of this action plan? What are the kind of the key things that landowners maybe need to do?
Well, there must be there are landowners for the 80 grasslands that we found exciting wax caps in, and the Isle of Man Fungus Group needs to work with those people and say, you know, what you're doing is fantastic for fungi. The short grass, the heavily grazed, it's marginal land between uplands and the main intensive farmland. And these wax caps are colourful. They've got all sorts of other things like spindles and earth tongues growing with them. Explaining to these landowners what they've got and saying what you're doing is just great.
And again, you know, going back to the why does this matter, you know, people could reasonably argue, well, got a few fungi disappearing would hardly be the end of the world, would it?
Well, it'd be a bit like the removal of the rivets in the aircraft. I think we could probably not miss quite a few fungi, but we actually just don't understand exactly what they're doing in our ecosystem, except that we know that they're rotting things and causing decay and recycling. They could play a very critical part in the release of nutrients in grasslands, for example, so that if we didn't have them, we might have to put on more nitrogen fertilizer. They could be playing an important part in other animals' life cycles, perhaps insects. There are various fungus gnats. We don't really know where all these things connect up. And eventually, systems start to fall apart if you take out too many of their species.
And Richard, I mean, I notice a few greying hairs in your beard. I also have a few greying hairs.
I do
too.
Have one or two.
We have been on this earth for quite some time, and I suppose in the overall scheme of things, it's a relatively short time, and yet things have changed quite dramatically since we would have been children, maybe 40 years ago, maybe a bit more. Do these action plans have the ambition perhaps to try and reverse some of the trend of extinctions of species or reductions in the amount of biodiversity?
Absolutely, that's what it's all about, because that whole thing about sustainability and leaving to our children the place in a hopefully better state, not even just as good, but a better state than we found it. We've seen declines in all sorts of things, and we want to reverse that and try and hand it down in as best state that we really can. So people can be able to enjoy, utilise these things, and they can be there in their own right into the future for many, many generations. We have no right, I feel, to, you know, decide that something should or shouldn't be here for future generations.
And as far as these action plans go, I mean, you mentioned that there are more that need to be produced. How far along the journey in the production of action plans are we?
I don't know in terms of a timeline and what point we're at, but there's enough that we felt it's worth sort of announcing there's a chunkier tranche of them. But they are coming forward all the time. They're trickling out. It does depend on the availability of people to put resource into. I'm not just talking about government. All of these different interest groups that are providing all of the key information, technical detail that enable these things. They're pulling this information together and producing these as they can, and they will continue to come forward as time allows them to do so. And the ones that are up there will be reviewed as need requires as well. So it's really an active area. It's not something, oh, you do it and that's done. No, absolutely not. It's putting on paper our priorities, trying to get that action on the ground, reviewing it and say, okay, what next?
And John, then, in terms of inland fisheries and our inland waters, what actions do you think that your team are going to do differently as a result of these action plans?
Well, basically, you know, there are certain areas on the island that are hotspots for causing issues for Atlantic salmon, particularly some of the very old weirs that we have. And that's one area that we'd like to try and target particularly, because we know that from research that by allowing access or easier access for Atlantic salmon up into headwaters and larger catchment areas, the Atlantic salmon can help to fix themselves rather than have a lot of human intervention. Also, I mean, we may be looking at certain restrictions to angling for salmon species in the future to help maybe progress their populations and allow them a chance to recover and maybe reverse this trend. Obviously, some of this trend is caused by climate change, which is something desperately out of our control to some degree, and we need to provide, you know, the best habitat that we can for these species, and you know, that's something that we can actively do and are trying to do. Say, for instance, the agricultural scheme, looking at riparian strip management, working with landowners to reverse erosion and issues where vegetation has been taken away from riverbanks. And with regards to that, that means that there's less silt going into the rivers, destroying spawning beds of salmon and other salmonid species for future generations.
And Ken, I mean, presumably the department wouldn't have produced these plans purely as a box-ticking exercise. You must have some ambition as a result of this. What would you hope will be achieved by the production of these action plans?
Well, certainly not a tick-box exercise. You know, we are very keen to have these action plans in place. It allows us to prioritise what needs to be done, and it also means we can work with the partners. You know, this is not something government can do alone. We have to work closely with partners across all organisations to prioritise, to achieve and deliver this. We want to deliver all those priorities that are identified in the action plans.
Liz, do you think sometimes government, particularly in this area, is left in a difficult position? Because on the one hand, you have an interest in protecting the biodiversity of the island, which is very clear and reasonable. But on the other hand, you need to grow the economy, and various developers will be whispering or possibly even shouting in the ears of ministers saying, we need to get on, we're getting disrupted by this, that and the other, and we need an easier, freer system. Where do you think the balance needs to lie? Is it in the right place at the moment, or does that need to change?
Well, for a start, I think we've got to stop framing them as opposites, that you can't have development if you're going to save habitats and species. I think that the difficulty comes when people try to set them up against one another, ecology or economy, because really we can grow the economy by enhancing our ecology. There are ways in which this island could do so much to sell it to the world as a place where wildlife and people thrive. And that's what we've got to work towards. And one of the things I get involved in is helping developers with ecological assessments. And so I'm constantly looking at ways we can make things happen, but still take care of the swifts nesting in the walls or the lizards in piles of stones or whatever the protected species is. So it's a question of people planning ahead rather than leaving the thoughts about the wildlife and the conservation of wildlife to the last minute and an afterthought, but planning ahead. And then it should be more easy then to combine the things that need to be developed with looking after the wildlife that's there.
So what do you think? Are you grateful that government is looking after the birds and the bees? Are they doing enough, or is it just bluff and bluster with no real substance? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now though, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayo. Thanks for listening.